In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss murderous grandpas, murderous swamps, and murderous trees in The Survivor by Bridget Tyler, audiobook narrated by Jesse Valinsky.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult, new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss The Survivor by Bridget Tyler, audiobook narrated by Jesse Valinsky.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love us so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay!
Yay!
You know what?
What?
I think... Because you know how you like to give a bit of background info for a book as
yeah.
we delve into it?
Yeah.
I think we should just tell everybody that if you want some background tidbits and information, they should just check out the bonus episode.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That is what I was going to say. I agree with that 100%. Our bonus episode was fantastic!
Yep. But for two reasons...
One is murder.
Yes.
And two is that we had both Bridget and Jesse. Or should that be first? That should probably be first.
In no particular order.
Murder.
Murder. Bridget Tyler. Not murdering Bridget Tyler, just no. Bridget Tyler. Jesse Valinsky. And even more murder.
And even more murder.
It's murder yes. everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think I've had a conversation with so much violence.
I know. And I kind of felt bad because I kept saying, and it's so terrible. But I love it. Like, I don't mean terrible. Like, it's not bad. Like, everything that happens in the book is bad. But it's yeah. fantastic.
It's because it's so well written yes. and so well read.
Yes.
I've read this book twice.
Yes.
Read it and listen to it.
Yes.
And yes. All the yes.
All the yes. All
and
the
I'm
time,
tying this in
yes.
into my initial thoughts because I was so bloody excited to get this one. Like,
yes.
since we read The Pioneer, I needed to read The Survivor. I actually very nearly read it a couple of months ago when we managed to get a little bit ahead of ourselves in our reading for the podcast schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember messaging you and saying, shall I crack on? Or read something else. And you messaged me and said, read something else, take a break. And I was literally looking at the library ticket and was about to press loan on this. And I didn't, because then I got another message through from you saying, let's cover The Survivor in September. And I was, ooh, let's not do that then. Not
yeah.
yet. Not yet.
Don't spoil yourself
dying.
Ahead
and
of time.
And look, audio podcast. Look what Claire's got.
Oh, look, audio podcast. Look what Amanda's got, too.
Signed copies.
Signed copies.
Mine says, for Claire, in hopes of a hum-healing, excellent birthday, because a certain podcast friend who might be sitting 4,500 miles away from me right now got me it for my birthday because she's brilliant and wonderful and I love her so.
Oh yay! Oh
thank
yay!
You.
But that's not me you're talking about. Surely you're talking about someone else. Mine says, for Amanda, a new adventure with lots of sparkles and bloodshed.
Nice. Murder.
True.
Even more murder.
True. Murder. True. Yes.
No lie detected.
No.
Oh, delightful.
So fantastic. Everything about this series is fantastic, except for the fact that we kind of got our hopes and spirits crushed by her saying, well, I don't know if there's ever going to be a third one, so.
I'm just going to weep into this tissue a little bit more.
Right?
Don't mind me.
Right? But it's okay because The end of this one, I mean, obviously we haven't even started talking about it yet, but the end of this one wraps up nicely enough that you can use your own imagination to decide what's going to happen next. So it's okay. It's fine. Maybe the world is peaceful, or maybe it's full of murder. Probably murder.
There's definitely going to be a bit more murder.
At least a little bit of murder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's refugee status on an unknown planet with carnivorous trees?
Yeah.
It's not the sorrel or the raptors I'm particularly worried about committing murders, or the humans. It's the trees.
Yeah.
Do you know how they say Australia is the continent that's out to kill you?
Mm-hmm.
Tau Ceti is the planet that is out to kill you.
Yes.
Tau Ceti is the Australia of the galaxy.
I think that is a fair assessment.
Cool. Should we dive into the summary then?
We should. Earth is dead.
Oh,
the
shit.
Prairie, fuck, the prairie is orbiting Tau Ceti E, but is about to crash into it, causing the mass extinction of three races, and Joanna has to help save the day by doing a spacewalk. The last time she was in the vacuum of space, her heart exploded and her brother died. But she managed to save a ship full of people from dying, so surely she can do it again, right?
Shrug emoji,
right? Obviously, her anxiety is spiking. Her mom, Commander Alice Watson, is trying to keep her focused, but she is also terribly worried. If you will recall from The Pioneer, go and listen to that episode if you haven't already, the prairie reached Tau Ceti E, which was supposed to be uninhabited, but reports were fabricated, and there are in fact two very different species on the planet, both of which do not take kindly to the pioneers, or should we say invaders? Because they're invaders to their planet, right?
The certain aliens? We are aliens.
They're human aliens.
Yeah, we are aliens to that planet.
Yes. Joanna and her mom are the only people who can fix the solar sails that are malfunctioning and about to cause the ship to plummet out of orbit, but Joe is freaking out. Joanna's grandpa, however, who arrived with the rest of Earth's inhabitants at the end of book one, in true space cowboy style, comes surfing over the hull. For a 74-year-old formerly retired admiral with a heart condition and, like, probably covered in iso goo because he just woke up from hypersleep, like, he's pretty awesome. Eric Crane is a pretty cool guy.
He's a spitfire.
He is, at this point, surfing over the hull in space.
So Commander Watson and Admiral Crane manage to fix the solar sails when Joanna lands a shuttle, the Trailblazer, in the prairie. She is shocked to see so many people up and about. Should they be asleep?
Shouldn't they still be asleep, please? Yikes.
Okay. So yes, I mean, it's dangerous to remain in stasis for a long time, and they've already been under for like 6 months now, but this is still a lot of people. And when Joanna meets back up with her mom and grandpa, who is accompanied by the sardonic Lieutenant Emily Shelby of the 156th Infantry, she finds out that something fried during the seal fix, and now they have 82 days to wake up 10,000 people and drop them off on a hostile planet.
It's fine.
No, this is not a good game plan. Yeah. So to say Commander Watson and Joanna are not pleased about the situation is an understatement. Admiral Crane and Lieutenant Shelby are, you know, the less concerned. They are very much, you know, by any means necessary people.
Yes, they are. While Shelby leads a band of boisterous, gun-toting Marines who, upon landing on Tau Ceti E, ratchet up the anxiety levels of the existing settlers. Oh...
Fun times for all.
So good. There they are already. The military grunts. They're here. They've been left in the dark, and the lack of information is worrisome. News of Earth's death has been given, but what about the survivors? Beth, Joanna's sister, leads Joanna to get some much-needed sleep, and during the night, Jay returns from an expedition. He's found out that his mother and sister are aboard the Prairie, and he is so happy. But for him to see them again, it means that Earth is dead. Should you be happy about that? It's questionable.
It is.
He's wrestling with his emotions, as is Joanna, and then things get a bit hot and heavy. Sexy space sexcapades. But not really, because it's not time for that.
No.
There are more important things.
Yeah, this is a strictly PG-13.
Yes.
Okay. So early in the morning, Joanna is woken by Chris, from the first book, one of the friends. He's the young kid. He's killed. And Beth moving about. Jay can't stay there, but there is still time for Chris to take the Mickey out of them. Bless. Oh, I like it when he goes, was it Joey and Jay sitting in the tree? K-I-S-S-I-N-G. I mean, that just tells you what Chris's mentality is. I mean, he's probably like 13 or 15 or something like that.
Yeah, he's a young teen.
He is. So as the talk over oatmeal and bad coffee, Chris reveals some of his extended family are on board the Prairie. Layla, who is Joanna's best friend and her brother Teddy's ex-girlfriend.
Ex-girlfriend because he is floating dead. Through space. Dead.
Very dead.
Dead and floating.
In space.
Through space.
Floating.
Dead. Forever. For infinity.
Do you remember in the first one we kept talking about is like if they did this as a TV series, like at the end of at the end credit on the final episode, it would do a cutscene and it's just Teddy still spinning off in space.
Yes, Teddy's little like popsicle corpse floating through space.
Yeah, like, oh, Teddy.
That's what he's doing right now, currently.
Yeah. So anywho, Layla comes bustling in. She's excited that her family is there too. And again, there's a lot of mixed emotions. The apocalypse is a difficult thing to digest, but some of their families made it off the planet safely. Excellent.
Yes.
Beth.
So good.
It is. Beth, she's been scribbling on her flex the entire time. She's trying to write down the names of all the people she knows who didn't make it. That's not much, but it's something. And for Beth, that's
huge.
A massive. Yeah. So after breakfast, Joanna stumbles across her grandpa in the stream. He asks her to keep reminding him that they are in an impossible situation, to keep saying out loud that they have made promises. He says this while he pins ensign pips to her collar. And they're heavier than she expected.
In more ways than one.
More ways than one.
Do you want to be responsible enough to have those on your collar? So there's a 21 gun salute at the memorial service, which seems disgustingly inappropriate.
Yeah, but I didn't like
it. No, the military grunts are there and they have to do something. And you know what that something is? Shoot guns.
Shoot a gun.
It reminds Joanna of something Tarn said. Do we all remember Tarn?
Who can't remember Tarn? Tarn haunts our dreams.
Yes.
With his bioluminescent, multi-angle jointed limbs and fingers and clear skin.
Tarn. So Tarn once said it's an honest display of strength. And that just, shooting guns, you have to show off. And I just roll my eyes. Joanna's mother is nowhere to be seen, and her grandfather leads the memorial service. His words don't ring right to Joanna, and she notices that her father is texting throughout the service. None of this is right. While prayers are being said, Joanna goes to find her mother, who is staring at a message set to go out to everyone. It's the full report of Tau Ceti E, the one that was withheld in the first book that says, hey, guess what? There are other things that live here. There are other living beings. And, you know, you probably shouldn't come here unless you're going to kill everyone. Kind of an important bit of information that they left out.
I do like your paraphrasing. You got the full report there in two sentences.
I mean, it's easier to digest that way.
Mm-hmm.
Commander Watson presses send. As they walk out to the memorial, people surround Commander Watson, and it seems to help return her energy and her purpose. Admiral Crane has a strange look on his face. It is at this point Joanna realizes that her mother is no longer in charge.
Oh.
Her grandfather is.
Oh.
Is this good or bad?
Space cowboy.
Hang on, you can decide for yourself.
Later that night, as Joanna is putting the last of the rubbish into the recycles, she notices a yellow light at the fence. Realizing it is Tarn, she lets him in. Tarn accuses Joanna of lying. She had promised that the pioneers would leave Tau Ceti. She tries to tell him that they don't have any other option. It's a hopeless situation. If they were invading, the Sorrow would win. But they don't want to invade. They want to cohabitate. Tarn gets angry, like very angry. He grabs Joanna by the throat and starts to squeeze and hum. She is filled with this like strange drowning sensation until Shelby comes across them and fires a warning shot. They both start to brawl and Joanna tries to call for help but instead steps between Tarn and Shelby, preventing Shelby from being stabbed. Tarn just looks down at her and then runs off. With his voice, he is able to disable the security fence and runs into the night. Well, shit. This is not going well.
Oh, I was so upset at this point. Like, Tarn, I love you so much. What are you doing?
Yes, why? And then he runs off through the security fence, being able to open it himself.
With his voice.
With his voice.
No,
it's kind of like.
Problems.
Exactly.
Yikes.
That tells you a lot about how he's actually respecting the distance.
Yeah.
You get a lot of information about Tarn in a very short space of time.
Yes.
And what do you do with this information?
I don't know. Oh, I'm worried. No. Don't come in and start strangling people. Don't. I love you, Tarn. Joanna has nightmares about this attack and, you know, all the other horrible things that she's seen and done and encountered.
Why does she even sleep? How does she even sleep?
I don't know. I wouldn't. 3 weeks later, while going for a walk by the perimeter, she sees a new raptor with a thorn crown slam into the fence. The raptors have been approaching Pioneer's Landing, but they don't seem to be from the same nest as Bob and Sunflower, our favorite raptors from Book One. None of these new raptors use sign language, and we all remember that Bob was teaching it to all of the raptors around him in his little nest, and it was adorable.
So cute.
I love Bob and Sunflower and their sign language, and their giant flower sign language. Sign language. Anyway, whatever.
Sun language is also appropriate.
Sun language is fine. So anyway... Jay runs into Joanna. He's on patrol, and it's been a while since they've really had any time together. Wink, wink. Not really. PG-13, remember, it's fine. Shelby keeps the squadron busy, running drills, doing target practice, or being on duty. She even has them settled in a different location, which further removes them from the community. And I get shifty eyes about that.
Yeah.
Jay says he's been put on a special squad to help... take care, with finger quotes, take care of the raptors. His squad mate refers to the Sorrow as glowworms. This entire situation sickens Joanna.
I do not like being called glowworms.
I hate that so much.
I don't know if it's just the general disrespect or the fact that the glowworm toys that you used to get when I was a kid are terrifying.
I mean, it could be a combination of both of those things.
I did have a glowworm toy when I was little. I loved that thing. But it was still terrifying.
Yeah.
So a couple of hours later, Joanne is doing some fixes and checks on a shuttle and is about to go with her sister as she conducts surveys of raptors. Shelby decides she's coming along too.
No, thank you.
Great. They land at the first nest, and there shall be protests about Beth going to carry out her work. For safety reasons, Beth is an obstinate, headstrong scientist and goes about her business. Joanna learns that Shelby and her squadron are from Mississippi. This was an area particularly badly affected by the storm wars. They all enlisted. It was the obvious choice of the orphans and the forgotten, and they've managed to come back together as a mismatched family. It kind of adds some context to Shelby's personality at this point, but it doesn't give me any sympathy towards... So while the three are looking down at the nest, they notice some baby rafters. It's a little baby vegetable patch or something. It's just delightful. And I think they actually refer to them as the baby vegetable patch of killers or something like that.
Something along those lines, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it's if they didn't, they should have.
So it's during the surveillance that Joanna notices Beth slip her flex into a pocket and pull out another. She's hiding some information from Shelby, and therefore their grandpa. Why? So many questions, no answers.
So many questions. Yeah. Joanna confronts Beth a short distance from Shelby, who admits, since she was nearly responsible for ecological genocide, she's been doing this for a while. And no, she doesn't trust their mother or their grandfather because they've both been lying to everyone for years, orders or no orders. It's reasonable, I think.
I can't fault Beth, ever.
No, Beth knows what's up. During this hushed discussion, two sorrow takers scale down the ravine and throw some glittering dust over the baby raptors that starts to cut through them. This wakes the sleeping raptors, particularly Sunflower, who chases after them, with Shelby not far behind. Never one to miss out on potentially life-threatening danger, Joanna and Beth follow. They end up at the Sugar Lake Beach, where the hotspot communication equipment was from the first scouting party. Because the Sorrow appear to have stolen it.
More questions.
Since Sunflower won't follow them onto the beach, Joanna, Beth, and Shelby scale the hollow hills into a cave of solace roots. Shelby starts asking Joanna questions about the solace roots and the main Sorrow city. These are uncomfortable questions that Joanna is not really sure how to answer.
So when they return, Joanna goes to talk to her grandpa about Shelby's xenophobia, but she instead finds her mom. She's hiding in her closet-sized office. She was kicked out of the big one. Damn Admiral's man. She can't find a way to fix anything, and it's making her so mad. I felt so sorry for Commander Watson in this, but she's just desperate.
Yeah.
She's tried calling Tarn on the satellite phone, they know that he has, with absolutely no success. They don't know if they should console, should scream, should hug, should blame, or, you know, any other of the millions of emotions that's running through them both. To top this off, Jay comes out of the Admiral's office. He's been demoted for not doing something, but he won't tell Joanna what. Surely it's got to do with the new Raptor team he was on. It's the only thing. At this point, we've just, again, questions, no answers.
So many questions.
Yeah.
Joanna joins Chris to help finish the Vulcan at Riverbend. Once the base site of the scouting mission, but now home to the military squadron and their families. Chris and Leela have been working on a backup system to the backup system that will prevent future accidents like those that caused the loss of Chris's mom and 13 other pioneers in Book One. They also tell Joanna about a scrubbing system they found that would find and eradicate all traces of humans once the scouting mission was done. Terrible. These are similar to the scrubbers that helped kill Earth due to bad programming. Sounds great.
Why? Don't install update. Jeebus.
No. Only Chris, Leela, and the Admiral know about them. Oh, and Dr. Brown. Can't forget about Dr. Brown, the former head of the scouting mission that got awfully chummy with the Sorrow before, to borrow a phrase from Claire, before everything went tits up, which might explain why the Sorrow are suddenly attacking right now, currently, with firebombs.
Oh, shit.
It's terrible. All hands in to assist in putting the fires out. Smoke is everywhere, and as things calm down, Commander Watson tells them to get the Vulcan up because the Sorrow obviously want the scrubbers. It's not until Joanna, Chris, and Leela are in the air they realize that the Sorrow weren't attacking Riverbend. That was just a distraction so they could hit Pioneer's Landing. Uh-oh! Shit! Fuck everything!
Murder! More murder! Murder! So seeing some takers and one very large Sorrow with a diamond warhammer heading to the Trailblazer, Joanna and co. obviously go to stop them before they crash it into the prairie and kill the rest of humanity on board. She saves humanity a lot.
She does. Yeah. She really does.
There are too many Sorrow inside, so, you know, they need to take down the Trailblazer by cutting wires inside the engine.
Sure.
That is currently being powered up.
Of course it is.
I mean, they've done stupider things, like, I'm sure, but right now the pressure is on, so I really can't think of anything that might
be. No, this one takes the cake.
It does. So Leela is dangling inside, held up on a tether by Joanna and Chris when the engines start. Before the final wires can be cut, Joanna forces the three of them to drop, but they're tangled in their tethers. The Trailblazer goes down in a fiery explosion. Joanna suffers broken ribs. Leela may be burned, we don't know at this point, and Chris again is possibly concussed. They're on the ground when Jay and a couple of other Marines appear. The one in charge shouts at Joanna, how many Sorrow are there left? Are they armed? One? No? A few moments later, the Sorrow run past them, but Jay can't take the shot. They were unarmed, they were running away, but not defenceless. There is a scream as the Sorrow kills Jay's squad mate Hart as they run away. In the aftermath of the battle, Joanna finds out 12 people have been killed. The number of the dead Sorrow are more, but, I mean, is that any consolation? Jay is angry with himself for letting the one Sorrow get away and falls into his Marine training. Admiral Crane approaches Joanna, tells her she earned her ensign pips that day. Without her and Leela, the situation would have been a lot more dire. This was an excellent scene, by the way.
Yeah, it really was. Jay is not okay. He's very much the opposite of okay. While Joanna is in the medical tent getting nanos to fix her broken ribs, Chris comes to find her. He takes her to a supply area where a not-so-legal still has been set up. Jay has drunk 2 bags of Tau Ceti E moonshine, and it is strong stuff. With Beth's help, they manage to get him back to their makeshift room in the greenhouse to sleep it off with a sobriety patch that Beth has. Joanna demands to know why Beth doesn't trust their grandpa. It turns out Beth had been accepted to Stanford on a PhD scholarship where she would develop natural crops and air filtration that would have helped to heal Earth without the use of the scrubbers. Their grandfather killed it, got her application withdrawn, and the scholarship canceled. It took a lot of effort on their dad's part to get her into MIT after this. The scrubbers are Admiral Crane's legacy. A legacy that killed the entire Earth and devastated the human race. Fucking yikes. He needs to change his legacy on Tau Ceti E, but no one is questioning him. Joanna makes the decision that she needs to go back to the Solace and talk to Tarn. Beth, Leela, and Chris are, of course, going too.
So instead of running headlong into unknown danger, as seems to be a too regular occurrence, Joanna actually gets supplies.
Shocking!
I'm so proud. As she is taking a medical kit, her mother walks in. Oh, shit. In the makeshift morgue, Commander Watson tells Joanna she married her dad, Nick, against her father's wishes. Joanna's dad had hope and looked to the stars to save humanity. And she needed that. Oh, and she needs to take two medical kits.
Good advice. Good advice, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. Back in the greenhouse, Jay is protesting what they are doing. It's an improbable act to try and save everyone, but he joins them anyway.
Better go along. Yikes. With much-needed early morning witty banter, they leave in a flyer and soon spot another flyer in the air headed back to base. Behind it is thick black smoke. Jay tells them that Shelby has been using a flamethrower to kill the raptors.
She has more effective ways.
Of course she has. When Jay tried to stop it, another Marine got mauled, but not killed, which caused Jay to get demoted by the Admiral. The smoke is coming from Bob's nest.
What? No.
Stop it. Stop it. They land, seeing black char everywhere. And if they hadn't been in that exact spot where their friend Miguel was killed in the first book, Joanna and the group would never have seen Sunflower and a group of raptors, bloody and soot-stained, coming down the ridge in a rage.
Understandable.
Indeed. Trying to make it back to the flyer is impossible until Asaro turns up with a crystal spear. It's a bloody, awful, terrible fight, but the Sorrow wins. Joanna tells the Sorrow thank you and asks to speak to the Followed, aka Tarn. They're taken to Solace, and Tarn basically kidnaps Joanna from the group and takes her to the top of the highest tower in the city. Naked Sorrow are carving up the bodies of the dead, adding their bones to the city. They're both angry and desperate. Feeling disgusted, Joanna flees the room, pulls the ensign pip from her collar, and is nearly sick. Suddenly, she notices some of the glowing Solace roots above the city are flickering. She realizes that the Solace trees are dying.
Ooh, it's not good.
Yikes! Yikes! All the yikes.
There are flamethrowers and machinery everywhere when Joanna and Tarn reach the surface. Shelby, of course, is leading the destruction, but it's not just the prairie people amongst them. Familiar voices are behind the black heat-shielding masks. Joanna begs them to stop, and this causes discord amongst the people. Shelby is crazy with anger. She's going to shoot Joanna herself for mutiny, like... Mm-mm. Gun to the forehead, execution style. Suddenly, the Sorrow attack, and it's just fire and violence. Beth, Chris, Jay, and Layla have also come up top, of course, and are trying to escape in the flyer. To compound the situation,
let's
further,
make everything worse. Ready? Go.
What are we missing from this situation? That's right, the raptors. New raptors attack, yes. They manage to get to a flyer when Joanna turns and helps Shelby, carrying another very injured Marine on board. Shelby turns and forces Joanna to sit down and shouts an authorization code to lock Joanna in place. She is taking a lot of joy from this. She's gleeful that she can bring Joanna down. Jay slips on board and punches Shelby in the face.
Yes!
That was so satisfying. Cuts Joanna free with a taker's blade and they jump. During all of this, Chris, Beth and Layla have escaped. They land hard, and when Joanna stands, she hears a gunshot. Expecting to be hit, she turns and sees it was Shelby who tried to kill her before running off. But Joanna isn't hit. Tarn is. He stepped in front of the bullet.
Oh my gosh.
If you kill Tarn, I will come for you. No power on this earth will keep me from you.
Rage.
Flames. Burning. Rage.
Burning flames.
Burning rage.
On the side
flames.
Of my face.
Yes.
The Sorrow form a circle around Tarn to do some hum healing. While they're hum healing, raptors gather around the circle and start singing their own song. When it stops, Tarn is standing, shining like a beacon, and we all say, oh my god, thank you. Thank you so much. Bob drops down from the trees next to him and signs for Joanna to translate. He wants the sorrow to know that the raptors will protect the trees. No humans are welcome here.
Wow.
Wow is an understatement.
We need to digest that.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Huge. Hugely huge.
Okay.
Okay.
So hours later, Joanna and the group are at Dr. Brown's old camp base near the Solace. It feels like the first time that they were there, you know, injured, tired. But this time, unfortunately, without Miguel. And with a whole hell of a lot of scars and wounds. Yes. Chris has gone wandering and comes back very excited. He's found a spaceship. That is Sorrow a building. He wants to help make it fly. And yes. Joanna does too. As they are looking at the ship, a messenger fetches Joanna. It's Noor. The same Sorrow that Jay didn't shoot. The same Sorrow that killed Hart. Ooh, this is awkward. She takes Joanna to Tarn, now fully healed and suffering the same turmoil as Joanna. The armour he is wearing is made from raptor skin, the skin of the ancestors of those same creatures who helped them today. Pledged to help them further and aid in his healing. As they talk, Joanna receives a message from her grandpa. He wants to meet alone. So obviously she must go.
Ooh.
This is not good.
Admiral Crane is waiting at the top of a crystal arch. The Vulcan is on the ground. Joanna already knows her grandpa is a jackass, but now he is a crazy jackass. Joanna's parents tried to stage a coup, said he was unfit for duty, and this has caused infighting and bloodshed between Pioneer's Landing and Riverbend. Grandpa wants to use the scrubbers to break down all the humans who won't follow his leadership and wants Joanna to go with him to the prairie while he deploys them.
Bat shit loco.
Yikes. Of course Joanna won't go. She's part of Tau now. She tries to push him off the arch, but he slaps her. He can't let his daughter take over and try and fix this. He uses his tether and escapes.
No! What?
No! Jackass. Awful. Awful.
He was so cool in the first one. Mm. And then we got to know
him. Yeah, she looked up to him so much.
I was so excited for Grandpa.
Nope, crazy.
Now I want to push him off an arch. So Chris works out that Simulation 12, the backup to the backup, could help them. It will reset the Vulcan systems and therefore the scrubbers, but they need a craft to get them into space. Something they just don't have. They also figure out that the scrubbers won't work if one of the original Rangers is still registering on Tau. Dr. Brown is only presumed dead. Interesting. They need the Sorrow. Tarn agreed to help with his spacecraft and to locate and keep Dr. Brown safe because, as Joanna points out, because it's better. They travel to where Dr. Brown has relocated with no piloting, which makes Joanna redundant so she finally gets some sleep. Bless her. As she is talking to Tarn, who admits he came along in part to avoid a challenge as followed, Joanna receives a message on her flex. It's from Shelby. This cannot be good. It says one word. Gotcha.
No, thank you very much.
Another of the ships, 3212, tries to ram them. Noor tosses the flex controls to Joanna in the dogfight, and with her badass piloting skills, they are able to escape, though not without taking damage that forces them to make a crash water landing. Luckily, near the destination? I mean, there's still a lot of Tau there, but it's near the destination.
It's closer. It's closer than they were before.
Yeah.
Thank goodness Joanna packed all of those survival kits and that she remembered to pack a pontoon because the water is thick marsh with bubbles of death in it. actual literal death bubbles. Tarn does some humbug repellent thing to get rid of the sticky bubbles off the boat's engine, which is great until these giant ant bird things attack. Just having keeps a good day. Getting worse. One of them gets Joanna, who has never experienced pain like this before. It's got huge giant barbs digging in. Beth is able to remove it, but they keep coming. When they move into solace-like trees, the ant birds stop following them. Oh, thank goodness! No. In true pioneer style, something else attacks. Because of course it does. The roots of the solace-like trees begin to ensnare them. They are trapped, and the trees are tightening their hold. They're stronger than the solace trees, and guess what? Their sap is acid.
Yay! Do it.
Yay! No. Oh,
this is all terrible.
Shooting them makes them tighten their grasp, but then Joanna fires down at the root network. Breaking free, they power through the swampy water, but now, guess what? It just keeps getting better. The boat is taking on water.
Oh, come on.
It can't go smoothly. Nothing can go smoothly.
This is the type of day where you should have just stayed in bed and hit the PC there.
But guess what? It gets worse.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Oh, wait, there's more. They crash into a rock just shy of the muddy embankments. Jay leaps out to free the boat and pull it towards shore, and Tarn joins him. Collapsed on the mud, Joanna finds multiple death bubbles sucking the life out of Jay around his hips, but Jay can't feel them, not since his spinal wound put him in leg braces at the end of book one. Noor runs over and screams something so violently it makes Joanna dry heave, but it kills the death bubbles. Then they hear someone's cry for help in the distance.
Oh my god. Just that one after another.
I know, just over and over and over again. Like, how can this get worse? Oh, wait.
There's more.
There's more.
With your swampy water, you too can have the gift of death bubbles.
Oh. Wow. Thank you.
Free with every purchase. The scene is like something out of Predator. The 3-2-1-2 is standing empty. Marines are dead, killed in terrible, horrible, gratuitous ways. One has been eviscerated and is hanging from a solace tree, the acid sap burning him from the inside out.
Nice.
Another is separated from her head by several meters.
Excellent.
Tripwires are well hidden, but Tarn and Noor find them because they are sorrow tripwires. Yeah. It seems Dr. Brown has picked up a few tricks. I got serious Miss Texas vibes from Beauty Queens.
Yes. Yes, she's which gone I am like
all over.
Yes, she's gone native. There's not even words.
A beautiful Tau Ceti flower of violence now.
Yes.
Of her own making.
Yes.
So Speaking of Dr. Brown, they finally do locate her. Finally, thankfully. She's covered in blood and looking rather close to death's door herself. Tarn breaks the security fence with some humming and they take her aboard a flyer where Tarn spends hours hum-healing Dr. Brown while the others wait outside and tend their wounds. It's during this time we found out that Noor is Pell's daughter. Pell is the followed challenger from book one. Gasp! That's why she looks familiar. Mm. Needless to say, Dr. Brown doesn't take the news of the death of Earth well. And Tarn once again steps up and does his hum healing, grieving this time. It's the thing he did with Joanna, which Shelby shot at them for. He's like choking almost. But actually it's grieving and it's a
choke. And it's not terrible
song.
And you shouldn't have shot at him. So
no.
Back up.
What it's doing is it's boiling all of their emotions. So you feel horrible and terrible and it's just not good while it's happening. But after, you feel so much lighter. It's a group grieving exercise.
Yes, but it looks like strangling to death. Yes, but it looks not terrifying. So do not shoot at Tarn, okay?
No. Okay. Anybody shoots at Tarn, they'll have us to deal with.
And the raptors, apparently.
Yes. Excellent.
It's time for rest. Joanna is sleeping and having nightmares of being back on the Crystal Arch with her grandpa. Beth, who is sitting, studying on her flex, listening to the audio of that same moment, wakes her. Dr. Brown asks for Beth's assistance with something in her tent. She's trying to work out exactly how the earth scrubbers could have gone so terribly wrong. Something isn't right. It's at this moment Shelby reappears.
Dang it.
And she is a mess. And pretty bonkers. She demands Dr. Brown. She's going to follow her orders and kill her so she can go back to Riverbend and explain to the squad's families that the trees ate them. Fine.
That cannot be an easy conversation. Huh?
No. It's then Joanna realizes that Shelby doesn't know what's going on.
Oh.
She doesn't know that her grandpa is going to kill all of humanity on Tau Ceti E indiscriminately with the scrubbers at the death of Dr. Brown. She doesn't know any of this.
Dang.
And you can literally hear the whole, like, click in her brain as she finally realizes what the fuck is going on. But now, just as you think everything is going to be fine, giant ant birds attack.
Oh.
And they eat Dr. Brown's hand and go in for her soft, gooey middle bits. Uh-oh. Now Dr. Brown is dead.
Well,
shit.
So they have like a plan, and I think at this point it's probably like plan G or something. So they wait for a takeoff window, fly into space, attempt to board the Vulcan being piloted by the dangerously crazy and expert flyer Admiral Crane, override the system, and shut it down with Simulation 12. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now they have Shelby on board. She's on board with a plan too, but she's going to try and help them by radioing her people on the Vulcan and get them to power the ship down. Obviously, this doesn't work.
Wah, wah.
Admiral Crane dropped them off at the Prairie. They make contact with Admiral Crane and, I think, in pure genius style, mute his mansplaining monologue.
Yes, thank God.
Oh, thank you. While Joanna keeps him talking, Shelby, Chris and Jay go outside and manually guide the emergency docking tube, which will automatically override the Vulcan and force the two ships to attach. Joanna and Beth distract their grandpa with memories of his dead wife, long enough for most of the plan to be effective. Now, his wife has been dead for years. Years and years. Since Alice, Joanna's mom, was like 3.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside in space, Layla is shot at. And her tether isn't attached.
No.
Meaning she is now free floating in space.
No.
This remind anybody of anybody? Joanna is going to need to spacewalk as the last able-bodied EVA-trained person left.
Damn. At least Leela and Teddy can be together again. Floating through the vast emptiness of space. No. Joanna suits up and is out the airlock. After some tricky maneuvering, she manages to get the emergency tube to tether. Now, she needs to get to Leela. Jumping up to the Vulcan solar sail and putting all her trust in getting a viable tether, Joanna pushes away. She manages to reach Leela, and now they are spinning together, when a computer voice says, across the comms, tether fail. Shit. Nothing else. Shit. Free floating through space.
Maybe I'll even throw in a fuck.
Yes, that is also a reasonable response. Joanna tries again. Fail. But third time is a charm, and it connects.
Yay! You can stop cursing now.
Yay! For now, for a very short amount of time. Yes. They race into the Vulcan. Admiral Crane is on the bridge. Little green pips on the screen. The scrubbers have been deployed!
Indecipherable morning sounds.
And more cuss words. Chris is desperately trying to override the system, but can't. Joanna begs her grandpa to understand why he should not be doing any of this, for fuck's sake. It's terrible murdering everyone. He made a promise to Cleo, his wife, that he has to keep to save humanity. He worked out, though. To do this, most of the population has to die.
This is the plot to several movies I've watched.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And the bad guy who plots this is always quite crazy.
Yes. Look, there's still a very good chance that there are pockets of survivors that will thrive. Right?
Yeah.
Like, and he made sure the scrubbers would leave the plant life alone. So everything is going to be fine. And now he's just going to do it all over again on Tau Ceti. Because of course he is. The system can't be overridden. And there are tearful goodbyes with the group's families back on the surface. Chris runs off as his father comes on screen. Then everything goes black. The Vulcan is dead in space. For fuck's sake, what is going on now?
Chris didn't run away from his father. He ran to Tarn and Nor, who use Hum to destroy the mainframe. And he manages to deploy Simulation 12. Joanna gets a buzz on her flex. It's her parents. Everyone is still alive. And when they land, there's a mixture of human and sorrel. It looks like a new beginning.
So it did not end terribly after all.
The end.
The end. Oh, yikes. So much yikes, but it's so good. So good.
I love it. Like,
so
this good. Is some of the greatest sci-fi I've read in a long, 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 long time.
It's so good. It's so good because it's so terrible.
Yes! Just murder and death and death and murder. Everywhere.
Yes. All over the place. And just when you think something is finally going to go right, no, it's awful. Something else terrible happens. And it's just like the first one. Action packed from the very, very beginning. So good.
Yeah.
All the time.
I mean, to be fair, in chapter one, it didn't start with a prologue. I was like, oh, okay, so at least the characters make it to chapter one. And then when it started off in space... with Commander Watson and Joanna in space having to do an EVA. I was like, ooh, are we going to have heart explosion? Are we going to have death of the commander? What? And everyone but instead survives, we have surfing so chapter grandpa. Two at least.
Yes. Yes.
But dang.
At least. Yeah. I was a little bit upset, I'm not going to lie, that there was not an immediate heart explosion or terrible, horrible death of some kind.
There were some terrible, horrible deaths.
Yeah, but they didn't happen immediately. And no. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah. You know,
immediate
it's like...
death.
Well, no, actually, there is. There is. For, to quote. To quote.
Yes.
One. Earth is dead.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. I forgot. I forgot that the entire planet is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not gone. It's still there, but everyone's dead.
The planet itself is dead, but as far as you know, all life on Earth is dead, gone. Because you kind of... I don't know about you, but did you kind of make the assumption while you're reading it that if the humans can't survive there, can what anything else survive
no.
there? Because
no.
if it can't, it's because plants and animals aren't able to survive.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I retract my statement of no immediate deaths.
First sentence.
Immediate death of a planet. First sentence. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Not the prologue, but first sentence, honestly.
First sentence of the book, yes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I guess I should have been more specific that not, like, a character that we have grown attached to.
Yeah.
Did not die.
True. And the amount, I don't know how these characters survived. I mean, I can understand Joanna because it's from her perspective, and it's kind of a cheat for me. I think, well, if it's from their perspective, the chances are they are going to live. But I honestly expected Jay to die. I thought it would have. I thought Layla might have bought the raptor vegetable patch.
But no, they all survived. They are survivors. The survivor.
Yeah. What do you think they're going to do with the granddad? I mean, he survives to the end.
I don't know.
But
I don't know. Feed him to the raptors.
I don't know.
Launch him out into space so he can hang out with his grandson. That's what I vote for. Space launch.
Space launch. Because, I mean, how do you punish this?
I don't know.
How do you punish genocide?
Planetary genocide.
Planetary genocide. Ecological genocide. The attempted murder of three species. It's like,
I mean, there's
war
no coming back
been
from
committed.
That.
There's not. I mean, he's essentially declared war on the sorrow.
On everyone who's not him.
Yeah. There's no redemption. He cannot.
Mm-mm.
He's
no,
not a redeemable character.
No,
which
he needs
I
to
like.
Be murdered.
And I like the fact that in The Pioneer, I was like, oh, the granddad's lovely. And then he's turned up at the end. Yay! My God, I wish he hadn't bothered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're just going to murder everyone, just keep on going.
Stay home.
Stay home on Earth that's dead.
Yeah.
Because yikes.
You know, a bit of your old medicine would be quite nice.
So much terrible over and over and over again. Did you have a favorite moment? Of all of the terrible, which was your favorite terrible moment?
Can I say the whole book?
Sure.
Yeah, the whole book, okay.
Okay, good.
But, I mean, there were parts that were more stand. I adored Dr. Brown emerging from the tree viscera.
Yes.
I got some serious Predator / Ripley vibes from that.
Yes.
And I'm totally living for the fact that she went completely native.
Yes.
I adored the scene at the beginning with Beth when she's writing on the names on her flex.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. It was powerful. The scene with the grieving, when we actually understand what it is, that was like, wow.
Yeah.
Really, that was really quite emotional. But, okay, I think probably the biggest was with the raptors. And I think this might be yours, so I'm going to pass the ball over to you.
Yeah, please do, because that was my favorite. That was my favorite scene of the entire thing, and I loved every bit about this book. But that scene where Tarn steps in front of the bullet after, you know, you're not really sure what's going on with Tarn at this point, but he steps in front of a bullet, takes a bullet for Joanna, and then, you know, he's the followed, so everyone has to help save him, and they all do, and they all get together, and there's a massive hum healing circle, but then the raptors join in, and the raptors are there, and they're also trying to help save Tarn, and you're thinking, holy crap, all of this terrible, like, they've been battling each other for the existence of their planet, as far as we know. And now they're working together, and the raptors are there, and they're singing. And then they're like, we're not going to let anybody hurt these trees.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Imagine what it takes to bring an entire, like, two warring species together.
That's it. They've
It's huge.
It's kind of established in the first book, in The Pioneer, that the reason the sorrel go underground is because of the raptors. They've evolved in war against each other.
Yeah.
And the human species is that much of a dick. They've brought these two warring species together.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic, but it's not great at the same time, reputationally wise.
It does not make us look good.
No. I don't know how much this truce will stand up against the test of time.
But it's holding for now.
It's holding for now. And the thing is, though, this is where Bob is really important. And Bob had very little page time in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the only one who can communicate with both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously the sorrel and the human can talk. But he's the only one, really, who can communicate with Joanna. And he's the only one who seems to be understood by the sorrel. And a lot of that's to do with the fact that Tarn is so open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And willing to learn and not just go down the violent route that his brother Ord was going down in the first one.
No, I'm glad that Tarn got to take over and that Tarn is the followed now. I think he's a very... I think he's an exceptional leader.
Yeah, and it's happy. Kind of one of these situations where the reluctant leader is the leader that you need.
Yes. You don't ever want the person who desperately wants to be in charge because they're going to be an asshole.
Yeah. I do hope the truth stands up. And the trees, you know, the solace trees on the top are probably going to become quite relevant to the raptors because the trees underneath are relevant to the sorrel. So you kind of hope that, like, grove, that area of ancient wood is going to be very highly protected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still concerning that there's this 10,000 people to come down and where the hell they're going to go, but you hope that area is protected. And possibly the new nesting site?
Maybe. One of the many burned sites that they've just charred completely to the ground. Why don't you go live there?
Yeah.
I had a terrible thought.
Oh, no. I mean, this is a book of terrible moments as well, please bear in mind.
I know. Oh, man, I wish there was a book 3, and I wish that we could help Bridget write it, because we have terrible ideas.
Can we just say right now, Bridget, please steal all of our books, and can you just, like, write our names in the acknowledgements?
Yeah, it's fine. You know, send us a little bit of, you know, like a 1%. We'll take it. So what if... Okay, we've seen some beautiful trees that protect cities and, you know, they keep people alive and all of that jazz. But we've also seen some terrible fucking murderous trees. So what if the raptors are like, dude, we gotta stop killing these trees because the murderous trees are coming. And if we don't stop, they're gonna take over and kill everyone. Can that be a thing?
Oh my goodness.
Can that be a thing? Can the acid trees attack in book 3? In the figurative book 3 that we're writing?
Wow.
And that's why the raptors are like, hey, we're going to come and help you so you can help us when the murder trees attack, okay? Let's be friends.
Wow. And with murder trees will come ant birds.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're going to carve a path to get, you know, to where everybody else is. And in their carved path, the swampy river water is going to follow behind. So then you also have death bubbles.
Oh, God. It's a little bit Lord of the Ringsy, isn't it? You know, when the Ents are marching.
Yeah. That might be what I was inspired by.
Yeah. Okay.
Book 3. Murder Some Trees.
Shit, man.
All right. What's your least favorite moment?
Murder Trees.
Murder Trees.
Well, the book 3 in your head. Okay. Admiral Crane's reasons, and I'm heavy on the air quotes, for being a giant humongous jackass. I can see why he's stuck on this promise, because he was obsessed by his wife. Like, he seems the kind of person who might see his daughter as an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Especially after Cleo's dies, so he's the one who's solely responsible. So you can kind of imagine he passed her off to relatives or sent her to military boarding school or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can kind of I can see him being like a removed parent from the scene. And he likes the fact it's him and Cleo, and then Alice comes along and it's like, oh, third wheel. I mean, it might not have been, but that's kind of the impression I kind of got.
And you get the same kind of vibe from Grandpa as you do from Shelby, who's like, I would rather shoot a gun than have a baby.
Well, not necessarily shoot a gun than have a baby. He is more focused on the relationship with his wife and is not bothered by the offspring.
Yeah. He doesn't want to share.
Yeah.
He has a problem sharing.
Yeah, he's a very selfish person. Because he doesn't seem to have any relationship with Beth. And there's not really any relationship spoken about between him and Teddy. I mean, to be fair, Teddy's been dead since book 1 prologue. But, you know, you'd kind of think there would be some kind of recollection with Joanna of when they were in Geneva, staying at the grandfather's house, of the three of them. There would be a bit more of Teddy involved. It just seems like the only person he was bothered by was Joanna. Which, you know, okay, you don't have strong relationships with every relative, that's fine. But I just thought his reasons were shit.
Yeah.
I thought they were really poor for committing genocide. Twice. Well, once successfully and once attempted.
One and a half times.
I thought they were really quite... They didn't justify it.
Yeah.
I can see where he's coming from. Like, saying, if we have less people, we essentially create less pollution and we can heal the Earth. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, like, Thanos. That's...
Yes.
Kingsman, you know, that's the plot to a lot of stories, and I get the logic behind that. That makes sense. Yeah, execution is shit.
The execution of the execution.
Yes, the execution of the execution is absolute rubbish. But I made a promise to save humanity. Dude, you killed humanity.
Yeah. Let's find a better way to do it.
Yeah. Let's not be a dick about it.
Yeah.
Especially when he killed... And it's because, as well, he's so selfish that when Beth can come up with that alternate plan, he kills it, not because he thinks it won't work, but because it's not his idea.
Yeah.
It's a better plan, it's a better idea, but it won't kill off the vast majority of a species. And he didn't come up with it, so it's obviously no good. Yeah,
I feel like that's really what he's going for, is to make the population smaller.
Which and, I get. I mean,
yeah, it's terrible, but for the greater good, I guess, it's reasonable. But now, I mean, he's already done it. How many Earthlings are left? 10,000 plus a handful that are already on Tau? Can't you just work with that? Why you gotta kill everybody again?
Yeah.
That's not a lot of people in the grand scheme of things on an entire planet. Like, let's just work with this number.
He has to be surrounded by yes people. He's like, yeah. That's, you know, the cycle CEOs or whatever you hear about, and that, you know, unless you agree with them, you're fired. He has to be surrounded by yes people. It must have been horrible for Alice to grow up in that household.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it being a loving household at all. And the way she talks about Nick, husband, and Joanna's dad, you don't really, he's not in it very much at all. And I would like, I'd like his character to be explored a little bit more. I kind of get some sort of like ex-hippie vibe from him, which I kind of like. But you can kind of see why she turned to him, why somebody who's a bit more relaxed, more hopeful, somebody who looks to the stars, is what she needed, because her dad was so self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I didn't like?
The threats to Tarn's life.
Well, yes. Do not harm Tarn. He's important to me. But I didn't, like, I like Tau. I like everything that's happening on this, you know, made-up planet. And freaking Grandpa showing up with all of Earth that's left, it just really took me away from Tau. And I want to know what's happening on Tau. I don't care about Earth. It's done. It's just, forget it. I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, but that's where book three comes in with the murderous trees, so it's fine. It's fine.
The Fido trees suddenly start turning against them in the greenhouse. And it all goes a little bit Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. And you can just, like, you can barely hear it, you know, and the trees are talking to each other. It's all, like, whispery, and you're like, oh, fuck, the trees are coming, and they're going to kill us all. And the trees crept in. Wait, that's already a book title.
Yeah.
Can't steal that title, because that was a really good book.
Also, it wouldn't fit with the theme of the books.
No, it's got to be like a one word.
The Lumberjack.
Yes.
Shit, not this again. The attack.
The migration.
Migration.
And you think that it's going to be Earth, like, moving away. All the Earthlings moving away and going somewhere else and doing something else. But no, it's the trees and they're coming.
I would like the third book to be set further in the future.
And the trees have taken over and it's just the trees?
Not that far in the future, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Not that far.
Where, like, they've established a coexistence. It's not great. Mm-hmm. It's not the best. There's still some, you know, there's still teething problems. But something's been established. And there's, like, Joanna and Co. have to help Tarn with a rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, a splinter fraction of the Sorrow. And take it back to Tau and take it back to the people and how you need to bring the Sorrow together. And that just because humans are there, we haven't, for once, messed everything up. And you can have your murder trees, you can have your acid trees.
Yes, I need them.
They can be in there, that could be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, a bit more of an established settlement and a bit more of an established relationship. You actually forget how much time has gone on in these books. Because in the first one, it's easily over a year they've been there. They've established for a long, long time. And in this one, there's a period of 3 weeks. There's a period of a month. There's a period of a day. There's a period of hours. So, as everything builds up and it gets closer and closer to the end game, unintentional Avengers reference pun to the Thanos thing there. Sorry. But as it gets closer to that final confrontation, the time scales get shorter and shorter and shorter, which is completely understandable. Do you know what I found a little confusing while we're talking about these things?
What?
Shelby. And her absolute animosity, hatred towards Joe. It seemed to build very, very quickly. Like, she wasn't keen on him when she first met her on the prairie.
Mm-hmm.
But it went from antagonising the Admiral's granddaughter and feeling like Joe was helped through nepotism to, I'm going to murder you and I'm going to love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you get a bad taste in your mouth about people and you automatically hate them. I can see it.
Oh.
I do not find it unreasonable.
No, I get it. It's just very, it got there quick.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Shelby likes to kill things.
Shelby would rather kill people than have babies. So, yeah, it's fine. Did you love Shelby then? Is she your favorite character?
She's not, but she is.
Because you love to hate her?
And when she started getting redeeming characteristics,
You're like, oh, stop being a good human, jeez.
I mean, you know, you will hear this again, but I want the snot beating out of Shelby. She needs to have the smackdown.
Yes, but go and check the bonus episode for that.
Yeah, spoilers. But she just brought out a hate and love in me for her. Yeah. As soon as you meet her, you know she's going to be a dick.
Yes.
And you're looking forward to it.
Yes.
And when she sends that text message just saying, gotcha, you're like, oh, shit.
Like, damn it.
So close. And when she ties Joe down with that authorization cord, it's like, no.
Stop it. Get out of here.
It's like I'm divided between cheering for her and wanting to pelt her with rotten tomatoes or acid fruit or something, like death bubbles.
Yes.
Yeah.
She needs one or two of those things to happen to her.
She does, like a death bubble to the forehead or something. I don't know. Yeah. She just needs a good thrashing. She needs a good scoop.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. She really, really does.
So I mean, is she my favourite character? Probably out of the new bunch.
Yeah.
However, I will say I have a lot of love for Noor.
Oh, I love Noor.
There was some development between her and Jay that wasn't actually like a conversation that the two had together. It's like Joel was there in between.
Yeah.
For all the fact that Noor killed his friend, but he kind of at the same time forgives her for it. Or at least not necessarily forgives, but reconciles himself to it. She needed to live more than she needed to die.
Yeah, and it's war. So, I mean, it's hard decisions that you have to make. And she was running away without a weapon. I mean, she did have a weapon. She has her voice, but She was running away. Like, don't shoot people in the back. Hey, everyone, take that advice. Stop fucking shooting people in the back.
Can we say just stop fucking shooting people?
Yeah, that's true. Stop it.
Yeah.
Do you know who I liked? And we didn't really even talk about him too much. But Chris. I liked Chris.
He's
grown up. He's grown up a little bit. I kind of like was feeling in a really awkward way, like some flirtations between Chris and Leela. And he's what, like 14, 15 now? And Leela's how old? 17, 18? It's not that disgusting of an age difference. But I was feeling a little bit of flirtatious vibes between them. And Chris is like, he's the hero.
He is?
At the very end, I mean, We got to give it to Tarn and Noor also.
They helped.
They helped.
They're hero adjacent.
Yes, but Chris is just, he's like, oh, okay, well, everybody's dying and I gotta run off and fix this. And he had already made the backup system to the backup system to the backup system to stop terrible things from happening. And then he figured out how to make it work.
Yeah.
He's a gem. And I feel like some great things could come from him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, book five.
Okay.
Chris could be in charge of the place.
I think he could. Chris.
As much as I would think Beth would be, I think Beth would be like the chief, like, officer of. You know, she'll be the chief science officer, obviously. If she's pretty much already there, isn't she? But she'd be like his chief advisor. Because, I mean, as much as Jo's gut works, she's not illogical. She would be terrible at chess. Yeah, she wouldn't be able to think of different strategies and different techniques. Whereas Beth would.
Yeah,
but I could
Joanna
see Chris as being in charge.
Yeah, because Joanna is more in the moment, figuring things out. She does not see the long game.
No.
So let's just give her a break.
Yeah.
Let her and Jay go off and have their shower scene. Let's see what's going on with Chris next.
Yeah. This series could very easily for me go away from the YA and these people into adults. I want to see what they're capable of doing with a few more years of experience under the belt, with less traumatic circumstances building it.
Yeah.
They've had
But it can only be good things that happen. It has to be terrible things, but all have to end peacefully.
They don't have to be eaten by trees.
Well, most everyone's already been eaten by trees in book three.
Exactly. We've had a lot of tree deaths. There could be, you know, there was a terrible mechanical accident and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Normal, everyday kind of travesties.
Yes. Normal trauma is fine.
Yes. Normal trauma is fine. Life experiences are fine. But I would kind of like to see them in the future.
Yeah.
I want to see what... They're all so young. I want to see what can come of it.
What does the future hold for them?
Do you think Shelby could be court-martialed as well? Like, you know, she'll be thrown in the cell next door to Crane.
I mean, she's got to be punished a little bit.
She was following orders, and isn't it, like, historical or something? I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to be misspeaking, but if you're given a direct order by a superior and you execute that order, are you culpable?
Because everyone says, oh, he was just following orders. But yeah, he made the decision, or she made the decision to follow that order.
This is an element of free will.
Yeah.
Right and wrong.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
But Shelby needs some sort of punishment. Yeah. She doesn't need to be launched into space.
No.
But like...
Grandpa, something. Bye-bye.
Yeah, get out of here.
Bye-bye. Gets recycled.
Were you surprised by anything?
Death bubbles.
I love the death bubbles.
Probably more on the case of WTF.
Yeah.
Death bubbles.
Yeah. Yikes.
I did not expect death bubbles.
No.
And it was genius. I probably expected the ant birds more than the death bubbles. Plus, I like seeing... death bubbles.
Yes. I think I expected, please see bonus episode for descriptions of these other things. But I expected more, creatures to be in the water. You know, monsters living in the water. Anacondas with human arms. But I expected there to be more, sea
wildlife.
Monsters or something. Yes, not a death bubble.
No.
So I was expecting people to start getting yanked under.
That'd be cool.
That's
not for them.
True horror movie style, getting yanked under the water.
And the trees are, trying to kill you as well. What the hell do you do? Okay, this is book four.
Okay,
It's going to go down a horror route for a book.
Yes, because in book three... the trees have brought the water to them.
Yeah.
So now there's horrible creatures in the water. Okay, good.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
Book four, plan.
Planning the series out, it's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bridget. Get on him.
I think that's it. The ant birds, you say it took the rural creature. Not unexpected.
Yeah.
Acid trees, fine. fine.
Sure.
Because I kind of suspect that if that area would have been suitable for population, that's where the rangers would have been in their reports. They'd go there, not here.
Yeah.
So the acid trees I'm fine with, because different continent, different evolution of carnivorous plant life.
Mm-hmm.
But death bubbles, seriously, death bubbles. Probably the biggest surprise. I mean, it goes back to my like least favourite moment of as well, of Admiral Crane's reasons. And I'm like, I think I'm more surprised by my lack of agreement with them. Like,
yeah.
Boiling it down to the selfish nature of it, that he rejected better options or other options because the word his.
Yeah, that's just gross.
It's gross. But yeah, what about you?
I don't know that I was really surprised by anything. Like, I mean, of course, I was surprised by the death bubbles and the ant birds and the acid trees. But like, you know, you just expect more and more terrible things to happen. So I wasn't surprised that like that they were there.
Yeah.
Because you know it's got to get progressively worse. Because that's just how these books are, and that's why they're so fantastic. You just know terrible stuff is going to happen. So I don't think I was surprised by anything.
No.
I mean, I was surprised by the things, but not that they were things.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? No, not really, but it's okay.
No, I get what you mean. I do get what you mean. Because there's just so much action. You know, the precedent has been set that it's constant all the way through. There's no time to even get half a breath.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising.
I thought of something.
The creativity is probably the surprise.
Yes. I thought of something.
Okay.
That I was surprised by, but only I was surprised by my own stupidity.
Uh-huh.
For not realizing at, you know, when they're screaming the shields down, that Tarn and Nor are going to save the day. And they're going to scream the ship out of commission, you know? I'm surprised that I didn't see it coming.
I think it's because at that point you were embroiled in the humanity.
Yeah.
And I say humanity as in a species and not in the fact that there was any kindness.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess I was surprised by that. I was surprised that I didn't see it coming. Because we know that they have these amazing abilities that we didn't really see a whole lot of in the first book. We didn't see them using their hum healing and their humming abilities, you know, for evil, necessarily.
I would say more of it as a tool.
Yeah.
No, I get that. I fell in that same trap, but I think it's because I was stuck on the bridge of the ship and not really thinking there's two Sorrel back there who are ridiculously kick-ass.
Yeah.
And can help.
Yeah.
I think I probably thought they were on the ship to keep Shelby in line because, you know, she was free roaming to stop her from unlocking the tubes and whatnot and escaping. I don't know where the hell she would escape to, but, you know.
Somewhere. And she would have shown back up again in a terrible place and everything would have emerged awful.
From an acid tree having
she would have
converted the acid tree into one of her minions or something like that.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the first book, I kind of fan-casted a little bit. I mean, I turned Grandpa into Grandma.
Right.
I don't know about you. I think I wonder if it's because Bridget Tyler's got like a television background that I find it very easy to picture certain characters, well, certain actors playing certain characters.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you. I couldn't decide if Admiral Crane in my fan cast would be better played by J.K. Simmons or Stephen Lang.
I mean, I like J.K. Simmons.
I think the problem is Stephen Lang is the military guy out of Avatar, so he's kind of already in that kind of vein. But he's one of these where he could play that brutal grandpa but also give you a nice hug at the same time. And I just love J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. I'm not very good at fan casting. I don't think of it.
I kind of stopped seeing Carrie Ann Moss as Commander Alice as well.
I can see that. I'd be okay with that.
Because she's really good at playing stoic.
Mm-hmm.
But then she can really pour the emotions in. And I kept seeing Shelby as Lupita Nyong'o from Black Panther.
No! I like her. Please don't turn her into someone that I hate.
No, I think it's because she would do an absolutely fantastic job. And she would look amazing covered in the gore.
Yeah. Sounds
like, I just want to see her like rising up from Tau Ceti E's undergrowth, gun in one hand, pissed off expression on her face, and murderous intent.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not gonna say that she would not be great, but I hate Shelby, and I don't want to hate Lupita Nyong'o, because she's just amazing.
Oh, but I think she'd be so good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Bonus episode for my other fan cast. Speaking yes. of which,
hey, think is it's time? Time.
It's time.
It's time. Would You Rather is extra special today because we have not one but two guests with us.
Double special.
The fantastic Bridget Tyler and the fantastic Jesse Walensky have joined us today, and we're so excited! Yay! I'm dying right now. with love, and I don't know what else, but it's so special.
That's because we obsessively stalk you two on social media.
We
I think.
Do. We
this is the problem do. When you have 2/3 accounts to access. Like, change account, like, change account.
What? Yes, but oh my gosh, thank you two so much for joining us. We seriously love you, maybe a little bit scarily too much, but it's fine. It's fine.
But the positive way. No, no.
You know, I mean, I have a problem with having fans. I know. It's really not, you know, not a thing that authors enjoy at all.
No. No, you hate it.
Pretty just much universally.
It's the right amount of love. I'll take it.
Good.
I mean, your lawyer's on speed dial ready with the cease and desist and the...
They are ready. Shut it down.
Oh, quit.
Oh my gosh.
So you're doing this? We know for a fact you've got the one video call elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. We know. We know the cues. We're watching.
Well, that's probably the 3-year-old, not the lawyer. Just to clarify.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Child/lawyer. Get out.
Mine's in bed, thankfully. Otherwise he would.
And I have no children or lawyers, so I don't know. I don't know where this is going. So you both have been on the show before, so you know how it goes. You know that we ask our first question on social media and then share statistics and listener responses. And then we have 4 more questions that are just for us. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
I don't know how you can say that because these questions are awful. Like, I feel like a terrible person asking these questions. They're some of the group most horrible we've ever posed. So,
they're questions that need to be asked, though.
Yes. And if they're not horrible, then they're not from this book because everything horrible happens in space.
I think the message was, what are we going to ask for Would You Rather? There's nothing happy.
and it's great.
Something about, well, yeah, space is trying to kill you. We established that in The Pioneer. So, yeah. On social media then, I felt so horrible asking people this question.
You came really back did. Like, should we add a caveat that we know that this is terrible and we're not going to be people?
I added a caveat on just so we could get confidence. Oh, dear mate. So, would you rather jump into space without a tether in the hopes of catching your friend who is free floating with the potential that you will also be free floating until you both die? Or let him go? Let him go. Bye.
It's terrible.
You don't have to have that song playing in the background.
No, we're not gonna.
Licensing fees and all that. Go on Facebook. This makes a change. Imagine you'll like this. On Facebook, it was 50-50.
I'm so shocked by that. It's never
There's less anonymity. There's less anonymity now on Facebook with the polling being cursed. No. On Instagram, 29% said they would jump and 71% said they would let it go. And on Twitter, it was 67% jump and 33% said they would let it go. And we had some fantastic comments. Constance, our super fan on Facebook, said, I'm down for a free float. I have a feeling that either one has the potential to kill me. I'll go out in a blaze of space glory.
Amazing. Colin on Facebook said, can I say it depends on the friend? No? Shame.
Given Colin, you can.
Given that I used to have pretty frequent nightmares about floating off through space, I'll be the one waving from the command deck as they float past. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
I apologize for the loudness of this one, but I'm going to have to go for it because Nina on Facebook says, my survival instinct would kick in for a friend. So bye, Felicia. Now, if it were a child of mine, Leroy Jenkins! I absolutely love that pop culture reference. Thank you, Nina. You're the best. Makes me so happy.
Mihail on Instagram said, jump without a tether. At least it'll be exciting. If we die, at least we'll die with style.
Mihail loves a bit of panache. He's another one of our super fans who loves a bit of panache.
Yes. And the teller. Oh my gosh. Can I just tell everyone?
What has more panache than Nutella? I mean.
Right. Nothing. I voted to let them go. And I feel badly about it, but I also don't feel badly about it.
I mean, it's a pretty horrible way to die, so.
Yeah. Yep.
I agree. I honestly think like survival instinct will kick in and that you'll be like, oh shit. Shrug. Shrug emoji. That is my life.
I meant to go, but and then I didn't, and then now
I left the oven on.
Just awkward, so you know.
I've left the 3D recycler machine. Printing Oops. Something. I've got a planet to save.
Can I say so. That though? If it, this is going to be bad. if it was Leela and we were letting Leela go, which I love Leela by the way so much, but if we let Leela go, then she would join Teddy in the free float.
Oh no! You're just trying forever. To. You are just trying to justify. Being a terrible, terrible person and letting them go. You don't need to do that.
But I'm letting them get back together in, you know, the frozen, empty vastness of space.
A torturous, horrific death, which will be probably asphyxiation.
I mean, this is my problem, is that like I know. Well, two, first of all, my reflexes are not fast enough to go out after somebody who's floating away in space. So I would definitely be like, no, but I need a tether. But I, oh, shoot. And now you're out of reach. Damn it. But I also know that I would torment myself for the rest of time because I didn't go. So I think I have to go with I would try to go after them and probably do it too late. And then we'd both die. Cause I didn't neither chose to be ruthless nor moved fast enough. So, you know,
you're just far enough away that you can't grab onto each other. And you're perpetually just like, hi.
Hi.
That's awful.
Yeah. I voted to jump out and try and get to them because in my mind I'm a superhero and would be successful. I have that sort of like in my brain, of course, I would jump out without a tether. I would reach them. There would be some sort of fantastical flipping involved and I would land on some supportive, like, piece of space trash that we didn't know was out there that happens to be floating in the right trajectory.
That's good.
As Bruce Willis goes by riding the back of an asteroid.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, female Bruce Willis with hair. That's me.
It's much better
than a specify the with hair, because that's very, like, gender neutral of you to not assume that female Bruce Willis would have hair.
You know, look, I know that I have a bumpy head, and that if I were to shave it, no one would enjoy it. So I'm going to keep some of that on there just for camouflage sake.
Very small head. I feel like if I shaved my head, I would be like, I don't know, a shrunken head walking around.
Be curious now.
It wouldn't be a good look.
Fair.
As I test my head to see if I can feel if it's bumpy or not.
How bumpy is your giant head, Claire? This is the question.
I don't know. I've got a very big forehead though, so it would just be like extending that. I've got a 5-finger forehead.
It's terrible. Okay, let's move on to our next terrible question.
Wait, everybody has to measure their forehead.
I have like a 3.5 head.
Wow, you are tiny.
I have a tiny head.
I have an extra large men's hat size. So.
See, I used to watch Tyra Banks' model thing. It doesn't matter the size of your forehead.
It does, though. It does. Okay, next terrible
pencil
question.
Pencil test. Okay.
No, do not do the pencil test. Do you guys know what the pencil test is?
No.
I didn't until recently.
There's a store behind me in my neighborhood, and it's called the pencil test. And I was very like, what the hell is this? And so I had to look it up. And it's a test where if you lift up your bosom and put a pencil underneath and your bosom can hold up the pencil, then you have to wear a bra when you go out. If that's the pencil test.
And this is the name of the store?
Mm-hmm. The pencil test.
Is it a bra store?
Yes, it is.
Thankfully. Okay. It's not Hearts and Crafts. That was my other option.
You say clearly, but you never
passed the pencil test.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. I failed a pencil test, just so everyone knows.
I passed with flying colors.
I would say not having large enough bosoms to hold up the pencil is a fail.
Wait, are you holding it on top of?
No, okay, underneath. Underneath. You have to tuck it underneath and then hold it. This is a
that would be a set of bosoms that could hold it on top without a bra, and that would be something.
I can do that.
I've seen a few.
I can do that. I can just rest things. These things are shelves.
There you go.
You
nope.
know?
Nope, nothing.
Do you want one of these big heavy boxes? I can put your book there and it's free promo, honestly. I don't need the t-shirt printed. I can have one underneath and one on top. I laughed at the pencil test. It's like, no. No.
Anyway.
Let's move on.
Let us please move
on. This is a safe space.
Would you rather kill your grandpa knowing that will stop his genocidal plans, or let him live and risk everyone else on the planet? Another fantastic question.
You see, I think this one's dead easy. And, you know, if I was to quote one of the classic movies of our time, Demolition Man, murder, death, kill. It may be that I did not have a grand relationship with my own grandfather. So, you know, I'd have pushed him over that arch a long time before. I would have even let him do his bad guy and monologue. Nah, dead. Dead. Save everyone. Kill him. Whatevs. Little dudes.
Straight over.
Yeah. Move on.
Well, see, the book would have been over then because...
Yeah.
No, because you've still got the whole Tarn not happy with the whole human aspect and, you know, the raptors are still there.
Look, Tarn is great, okay?
Tarn is great.
Do not make Tarn out to be a bad guy here because he is fantastic and I love him.
I am not dissing Tarn. Never diss Tarn yet, because I'm quite sure when we talked with the Pioneer, I said I like the grandpa, and then the Survivor came out and I read the Survivor. So what's going to be in the third one? Who am I going to start hating in the third one? This is what I'm asking.
Not Tarn.
Not Tarn.
Or Nor. Please don't let it be Nor either, because I really like her.
No, well, first of all, not to let you down easy. The third one is a, we can invent the third one, whatever third one you want, right? Oh,
okay.
Here.
Okay, we're fanficking.
The chances of an actual third one are mostly dependent on, I mean, probably a TV show someday, which is also a highly fictional concept at this point. So
that's you can, fine. Anyone can you want
can turn on them or not. It's all good. Everyone can be good forever from now on. All happy endings.
Okay.
I still need conflict. Just a little bit. Shelby's still knocking around. She'll mix things up.
Don't worry. Tarn stays Tarn. Tarn is not secretly a bad guy.
That's all right. And Tarn is followed. That's fine. As long as Tarn is around and Tarn is followed, I'm fine.
He shall be.
Good.
Probably.
Yes.
So, is anyone else murdering their grandfather? Everyone else is murdering their grandfather?
I am.
You're murdering your grandfather. Jesse, are you murdering your grandfather?
I had a great relationship with my grandfather. But yeah. I'm sorry. I've watched a lot of sci-fi and read a lot of sci-fi, and there's no actual redemption for someone like that. So you can put them in a cell and say, oh no, we'll be able to rehabilitate them so that they don't want to murder everyone. And with that type of character, I just don't see that happening. So yeah.
I mean, it is just his like second that. Genocide, really. You know, he's got a pattern now.
Yeah. He's screwing them up.
There's a pattern. There's definitely a pattern. And there's a manipulative quality to him as well. Mm-hmm. Aside, you know, and it's like, he'll convince someone to let him out. He'll convince someone to be like, no, it's totally fine. Not gonna hurt anyone while I stab you in the neck with a pencil.
Think you swear.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, kill that guy.
Okay.
Amanda, you haven't said if you're killing your grandpa.
Oh, yeah. Definitely killing my grandpa. Definitely murdering my grandpa.
So speaking of violence, would you rather...
That's a good segue. I like that.
would you rather kill Shelby or just bitch slap Shelby? She gave me strong emotions throughout the whole book.
I would die. I love Shelby. Shelby is my favorite. So I would definitely bitch slap her and then like recruit her to be my best friend because I love her. Okay. She's such a bitch and she's amazing. I love it.
It's just like your book. She's terrible, but I love her so much. Every awful thing. She's awful in the worst way. I love her.
No, Grandpa's the worst way.
Oh, Shelby, yeah, okay.
Is just doing what she thinks is the right thing for her very limited set of people that she values in life. So,
at least you know where Shelby stands. Like, she exactly. Fully says, I would rather kill than procreate. And if I've got a gun, I'm probably going to shoot you. You know where you stand with her.
She is very straightforward. I don't know if I would do either, to be honest. I don't think a bitch slap is enough. I agree. She's very straightforward. So, you know, I don't think that she, based on her trajectory, I don't think she deserves to be murdered. But I do think she deserves to have the tar beat out of her. So
that's a very good Mississippi
reference. One slap is not enough. I'd rather like go a couple rounds in the ring so that we can all get out our aggression and be like, okay, we're on the same page now. Great.
I like it. And you would probably be best friends after you both beat the shit out of each other. We'd be like, oh,
that's
yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. It's one of those times where you get absolutely hammered, have the fight, and then next day you're like, yay, bestie.
Yeah.
And you just, and everything. Yeah.
Just as my husband says, expel the demons.
Yes.
Through violence.
Yeah, I don't want to kill Shelby.
No.
I need Shelby.
There's points where you kind of like, she needs a gun to her head. And then probably just, you know, the barrel hit over it.
Like a pistol whip? You're going to pistol whip Shelby? Should we change it from bitch slap to pistol whip?
She needs to be bitch slapped back to earth.
No. But
obviously, not actually go to earth. She needs to stay on Tau Ceti E. But she does need the stuffing knocked out.
Can I tell you how much of a pain in the neck it is to not be able to use earth as a reference to soil or dirt? Or like say okay. Anything like back to earth or whatever.
Nope, can't do that.
Nope.
Thanks.
Open
you
this
don't know how much you say it until you can't say it anymore.
That's
I so appreciate the attention to that detail though. Because there are so many times where you will read things where you're in a completely made up world or universe and you know things are still used that occur on earth and you're like, but I thought we were in a made-up place, so everything's the same really, we've just changed some of the names. But when you use that attention to detail, it, for me as a narrator, it makes me so happy.
Yay.
Well, because it helps, you know, one of the things for me is my job is just to take the world that you've already created and put that imagination into and be able to three-dimensionalize it. And it just makes it effortless when it's like all the details are right there on the page. I just have to lift them off. That's it.
That's always been the goal. And I think a lot of authors do this, but I have to read everything out loud myself. Otherwise it doesn't, in order to like clean the sentences up and stuff, like there's no other way.
For sure.
No other way to really get that for me to get without my own muscles. Like you can even have I figured out you can get your computer to read things to you. And for a minute I was like, yes, I don't have to do this anymore. And it doesn't work as well because it doesn't, like your brain doesn't process things in the same way.
For sure.
But, and I, at this moment in my life, spend a lot of time reading out loud to the small heathen who lives in my house. and I'm like, I find myself editing sometimes while I'm reading because things that I remember being mad at my editor for being at my all over me about like some of the like passive sentence things or like positions of, stuff that I was just like, oh, fine, I'll fix it. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that doesn't make it super awkward to read.
And then Jesse has to narrate it.
I will say this. In The Pioneer, when I first read that the Sorrow had this certain intonation to their voice that had this sort of tri-chord situation with how they spoke, I did sit there for a little while ago. What am I going to do for that? How do I do that? And I actually had to go back to when I was in high school and I was in chorus. And so I just sort of started to imagine, okay, what did it sound like when we had the soprano and the alto and the tenor section? And then when we would all come into like that one section where everybody was, okay, so just be the harmony, Jesse. Be the harmony.
I love it.
Yeah.
I always thought that kind of sounded a little bit like, you know, the aliens in Galaxy Quest.
Right.
The ones that need the help. And it's like, I kind of get that vibe from them, but not quite. It's a bit weird. But yeah,
yes.
I've got a bit Galaxy Quest in with their voices. That's just when I'm reading it. When I listen to it, I just let you take over. It's fine.
Now I feel like I need to watch Galaxy. Like, I don't know if everyone else has been doing the weird, like, pandemic inspired watching of old movies that you haven't watched in a million years, but now Galaxy Quest needs to go on my list because I
that's on the list now. Galaxy Quest was my first date in high school.
Nice.
my very first date that I went on with a guy in high school, we went to see Galaxy Quest. And we're still friends.
Oh, good. Well,
I was going to say, a good choice.
Yeah.
Well, that's on the to-watch list tomorrow.
Excellent. Is it on Netflix? Can we watch it together on a Netflix party?
I'm looking now.
Oh, my Netflix is different as well.
Yeah, your Netflix is stupid. Your Netflix doesn't have anything that our Netflix has, which ruins all lives.
No, it's not on Netflix at the moment on my end.
No, it's nowhere. It's nowhere for free.
Oh, shame.
I bet it'll be on Prime.
Yeah, it's a rental on Prime.
I'll just watch the Blu-ray. And then after that, watch Hocus Pocus because it's September, so it's obviously October now.
No, it's Halloween now.
It's Halloween. It's the 3rd of Halloween today.
Yes.
I should Hocus send... I was Hocus Pocus with two friends of mine. We're the Hocus Pocus witches. Sheesh, now I think it's like 5 years ago because time passes very quickly, but... That was maybe my like most ambitious adult Halloween costume to date because like
jealous.
Like, I got like a prom dress at the Goodwill and like sewed an extra skirt on it. That was fun.
That's the dream I've always wanted to do with Sanderson's sister. We should have a Hocus Pocus watch party, but that's on Disney Plus.
Well, I have Disney Plus.
So do I. Who doesn't?
I do too.
Right, we all need to watch Hocus Pocus. It's happening. That's what I'm hearing. Okay, let's get back to Would You Rather.
Yes.
Next question. Would you rather battle a living carnivorous tree with acid sap whilst fighting ant birds or go swimming in swamp water with potentially huge carnivorous death bubbles?
Death bubbles. I just love it.
Death bubbles are fantastic.
That's not my answer. I just needed to say death bubbles. No, actually, my answer is going to be death bubbles.
I think it depends on how fast you swim.
I'm not a fast swimmer. No? I'm also not a fast runner. I can barely hobble at the moment.
I feel like there's more that can go wrong with the carnivorous trees and the scary ant birds. I would choose the river with the death bubbles just because you only have one thing you have to combat at that point. Although, I don't know, Bridget, what lives in that river? I feel like
nightmares.
Other things, not just death bubbles.
There's got to be more than just death bubbles in there. So, I mean, I feel like it would be a situation of you've survived death bubbles and now here's, you know, an anaconda with human arms.
What eats a death bubble?
The anaconda with human arms, clearly.
Yeah. What eats the anaconda with human arms? This is going to spiral into a dark and desperate place of nightmares.
But I don't know. I just read the words. I don't write them.
Tarn waiting to heal. Is Tarn waiting to heal you when you get out of the water, though, is the question.
That would be my caveat.
Just want healing. Because if everybody
I can take a couple of death bubble hits and still get to the other side, I feel like I have a better chance. Like, you're going to get maimed either way, but I feel like I have a better chance of surviving the maiming because once you get out of the water, the death bubbles are going to, like, dry up and fall off, right? So.
What do you want to maim you less?
But I feel like once the giant... Also, are we talking the little ant birds? Or are we talking the big ant bird?
You don't want to know when the mama ant's going to come into play.
Yeah.
If I have Tarn and Noor there to hum heal and shout kill the death bubbles, then that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
And I'm going to always depend on them because they're my heroes. They're my glowing heroes.
You got to have a team. You're already dead if you don't have a team. Like, you never got to the death bubbles and the trees without your team. So I'm going to go ahead and say my team can probably save me from the death bubbles, but not so much the acid
sap.
No.
That's rough.
I got a little bit alien bloody, you know, xenomorph blood vibe from that. And I was like, oh no, that's going to sting.
Yeah, well, like, you know, you wrap yourself in a meat jacket like Dr. Brown.
She's my hero. Yes. Oh my God. She was like Ripley, the badass morpho emerging from the viscera going, ha ha.
Here I am. Don't worry, I'm still alive. Oh fuck, there goes my hand.
What's up, bitches?
Oh, so good. So good. Yeah, okay, good. So we're all going with Death Bubbles.
Yes.
And anacondas with human arms. What's our last question?
We've actually reached it. Okay, picture the scene. Earth is dying. There are two possibilities to save your home world. Would you rather develop technology which will clean the pollution from the atmosphere, or develop an organic solution that will take more time and, shockingly, be able to be used to murder everyone on a planet? Yay!
Everything ends in murder.
Everything's ended in murder this way.
And that's why it's so
a very
great.
Violent would you rather.
Everything is murder, and it's fantastic.
I can't believe the shower scene didn't end up in the would you rathers. I mean, it's the only non-murdery thing in the book, guys.
That's why it didn't make it, because it wasn't about murder.
And also, really, what is the, like, oh, are you gonna squig out and kick your boyfriend out of the room?
No, you look over your shoulder and wink. Yes. Would you rather take a shower with the shower socks on or the shower socks off, not knowing when the last time the shower was cleaned? There you go.
Gross.
That's also really not a question. Not a question.
Gross.
So what are you? How are you saving the planet? How are you saving the planet? Artificially or through natural means?
Well, the thing is neither one saves the planet.
It's all terrible.
It's true in one book or the other, both of them potentially apocalyptic.
So, I mean, caveat, I would rather do one that works.
Without the murder.
Without the murder.
You correctly date everything and it's fine.
Can we have the backup to the backup to the backup of the backup?
Oh, well, can we have the version where Grandpa doesn't sabotage it? You mean?
Because we've murdered him already, so it's okay.
Right. So we're fine.
Yeah. So we've murdered him, so yeah. We can clean the atmosphere.
Let's just execute Section 12. And then let Beth sort everything out.
Yes, let's put Beth in charge of everything.
Beth in charge. Let's go and find that still, and let's have a good evening.
Yeah. Beth will take care of it. The rest of us will be at the still. It will be fine.
Yeah.
She'd probably appreciate us keeping out of the way, to be fair.
And honestly, then she'll come along with her patches and sober us all up.
Mm-hmm.
Beth is the hero. That's what I'm hearing. Beth is the
let's
hero.
Let's acknowledge that.
I mean, if you want the thing that works actually, well, to give away a little of my theoretical book three plans, the thing that works is actually Grandpa's murder plan. So, because, you know, he's not wrong.
You have to kill a few to save the many.
Or kill the many to save a few, whichever way you want to go.
You did go a bit Thanos in this with Grandpa, let's face it.
Yeah,
you know?
Just kill half of everybody.
Yeah. Except actually Grandpa was probably worse because he killed more than half.
Yeah, it's more than half. There are a lot of people on Earth.
Yeah. Let's just finger snap everybody. You know, we'll just leave a small population. It'll be fine. It's been proven. We've all seen the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
All good. All good. Thanos has a point too, man.
It kind of does. I mean, the Grandpa kind of had a point. It's the execution.
The execution of the execution.
The literal execution within the execution of the delivery of the solution is bad.
Solutionless problems, my favorite kind.
Oh, fantastic. I think we can conclude everybody just dies. It's all murder. Yeah. Oh, everything.
It's fine.
Hey, it's It's great. These are hopeful books. Uplifting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think I described them as they have heart, not hope.
Well, they're supposed to have hope, sort of.
I hope somebody bitch slaps Shelby. I hope Grandpa gets pushed off an arch.
I hope we murder all of the people.
I hope Tarn doesn't die.
Oh, there's a
pretty good chance now that Tarn and Joanna will craft a human and Starro civilization that can get along for several months at least.
It's going to be a bit like an upstairs. It's going to be an upstairs downstairs thing. Like the Tarn's going to be in the basement, humans are going to be up top, and the raptors are going to be in the garden,
just frolicking in the background, signing.
And the garden will only eat some of them occasionally.
Hey, I've been to her. I live near a poison garden. You know, it's these things happen. You take your life into your own hands.
This is why I'm a city kid.
No plant life for you.
This isn't an actual garden place in Annick. It's the original place where Harry Potter was filmed.
Oh, okay.
The original castle. They've got this massive garden place attached to it, Annick Gardens, and they have a proper poison garden. It's gated off and everything. You can only go in with a guide.
That's awesome.
It's cool. And you've got to go through this really cool black wrought iron gate to get inside. And it's all like intricately leafed and enameled. And it's really cool.
Nice.
Is there that any acid zap?
Probably.
Okay.
There's a wide range of poison plants.
That's all I need. Acid zap. Mm-hmm. I can't believe we made it through all of the Would You Rather questions. And we're all still alive. For now. Thank you again for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
That was wonderful. I'm so that happy.
So great. So great. I love both of them so much.
I love the fact we brought them together.
I know. It was very good.
It was so special. And we have recordings of them saying that we are free to stalk them on social media.
Yeah.
Which I probably would have still done anyway, so.
Yeah, and that they like having fans, so everyone else go and like them too.
Yes, please check out their entire body of work and then get back to us.
Yes.
And tell us which is your favourite.
Yes, please do. Okay, so favourite final thought quote?
I've probably got a couple, actually.
Okay.
So, consequences suck.
Yes, true.
Thank you. And walk in the present, that's the only way we get to see the future.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's what I'm going to go
with. Yes, that's a good one.
What about
you? So you have two. You have two. I also have two. One happened the very, 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 very beginning. Spacewalk.
Earth is dead?
What?
Earth is dead.
Yes. No, trust yourself, not the fear.
Ooh.
I liked that one a lot.
Yes.
And it's good advice.
Yeah.
Like, for real life.
Yeah.
And I got another one that's also good advice for real life. Maybe we can't understand each other, but we can respect each other. And
ooh,
everybody,
I like that.
Do that right now.
That is possibly one of the most relevant quotes.
Yeah, you don't have to like people. You don't have to understand what they're going through, but you can respect people. Don't be a garbage person.
I don't understand. You don't have to respect even the individual, but respect the fact that they have the freedom of will to make their own choices, and that's how they want to live their life.
Yeah, just have respect.
Uh-huh. Respect for life, and that's... If you can't respect the person or their choices, just respect the life.
Yes,
Wow. Okay, I like that.
Yeah. Some very good quotes. Very good quotes in this book. Very, very good.
I liked it when, who was it? Hate. Irony.
Yes. Yes. Oh, also, although this one maybe needs to be saved for book three, I'm not going to get eaten by a tree today. You're not, because it's going to happen in book three.
No, no. You might not even get eaten. You might just, like, melted. Dissolved by acid.
I'm not going to get dissolved by a tree today.
Yeah.
Can I have that on a t-shirt?
You can have that on a t-shirt. Okay. With a little blob of goo hanging from the tree branch, and the tree's got to, like, the expression to go,
yes, yes. Okay, good.
Bloody murderous trees.
Good. Good. Do you have anything to recommend? If you liked this, try this. What do you got?
I've actually gone back to The Pioneer when we were talking to Bridget Tyler then, and I mentioned about an Alien versus Predator book that I absolutely adored.
Yes, I remember you talking about this.
So it's not YA and it's not new adult.
Well, that's everything that you ever suggest, Claire.
It is. I branch out a bit.
I feel like you preface every single, if you liked this, try this with, well, it's not YA.
But, however, don't get the fact that's an Alien versus Predator book confused with the movies. Because the movies are absolute garbage. The total dumpster fires in comparison to the books. The books are bloody fantastic. And this one blew my mind. It was written in 1994. I didn't read it back in 1994. I probably read it early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I liked it because it's sci-fi with a female protagonist who absolutely fecking kicks ass. So this is the first of the two books that she's actually in. And it's, this will be taken from Goodreads. It's Alien vs. Predator Prey. And it's by Stephen Perry and S.D. Perry. But you'll probably see him on the book as being Stephen Perry and Steve Perry. So I apologise for butchering the name. But it's Machiko Noguchi accepted the assignment of supervising the ranching colony of Ryushi as a challenge. Little did she know that not only would she have to run the colony, she'd have to defend it with her life. First, a carcass of a spider-like alien is discovered. Then, a rancher's family is massacred. Finally, a creature unlike any ever seen before is brought to the colony medical centre, near death. It soon becomes clear that not one but two strains of alien life have landed near the settlement of Prosperity Wells. One kind, beetle black, with shells as hard as steel, have been spawned as the prey in a deadly hunt. The other kind, upright like humans, but infinitely stronger and just as smart, are the predators. Between them are the human colonists, unarmed and vulnerable. With the entire colony at risk, Machiko must choose between death and survival, and may find her greatest ally in a predator ready to kill her.
Excellent.
For me, it draws a lot on the pioneer and the survivor kind of tropes that are used.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's action-packed. And just forget about the movies. They do not exist. They do not exist. Check this out. It's great, great sci-fi. Do you have one?
I do have one. And I picked this one because I've read it. And I enjoyed it, and it's in space, but it's not the same. But it is YA.
She looks pointedly at me.
I chose Across the Universe by Beth Revis. A love out of time. A spaceship built of secrets and murder.
Dum, dum, dum. love.
17-year-old Amy joins her parents as frozen cargo aboard the vast spaceship Godspeed and expects to awaken on a new planet 300 years in the future. Never could she have known that her frozen slumber would come to an end 50 years too soon, and that she would be thrust into the brave new world of a spaceship that lives by its own rules. Amy quickly realizes that her awakening was no mere computer malfunction. Someone, one of the few thousand inhabitants of the spaceship, tried to kill her.
What?
And if Amy doesn't do something soon, her parents will be next. Now, Amy must race to unlock Godspeed's hidden secrets. But out of her list of murder suspects, there's only one who matters. Elder, the future leader of the ship, and the love she could never have seen coming.
Ooh.
Ooh.
It's so a murder mystery in space.
It's a murder mystery in space. And this is a trilogy, and there is some planetary things that occur in the last book.
Ooh.
So they're not always traveling across the universe.
Sounds very good. Very, very good.
It was a very good trilogy. I enjoyed all three of them.
Do you know, there's just not enough good sci-fi. It's difficult to find good sci-fi, not just sci-fi.
Yeah. And also, like, hard sci-fi in space. Not just, like, oh, this is a dystopia, and this is social science, and whatever.
Earth is not the primary backdrop.
Yeah, I need more space books. I like space books.
Yeah. If any of our listeners have read some good hard sci-fi, let us know.
Yeah.
We crave it.
Yeah. Don't mind the soft sci-fi. It's fine.
But it's nice to be able to sink our teeth into something meatier and different.
Yes. Yes. Completely different. Listen to the bonus episode to hear Jesse talking about how great Bridget is at writing, like, a new planet. Listen to it. It's great.
I think there were 4 fangirls on that call.
I think so.
We have found our people.
Yes,
and
we have.
And it is on Tau Ceti.
Yes. All right. That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss Midnight Sun by Stephanie Meyer, narrated by Jake Abel. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. And be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com. That's fictionalhangover.redbubble.com to find all your favorite fictional hangover themed merchandise. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.